session number 10413, rule 16.
Mr. George South, Reel 16. We were talking about the conditions of service while you were in the Tilly area during the hold-up. Mm-hmm. What did you do for water? Did you get enough water supplies?
Oh, yes. You used to get water every morning for drinking purposes, washing purposes if you wanted to wash, brewing up.
What standards of appearance were you expected to keep up?
As best as you could, because you had no time for shaving. Night time you might get a shave if you had any water left, but you got 2 pints of water per day, and that was for drinking, washing. I've had a shave many times in my tea. You know, when they come up with a pot of tea, when they come up with breakfast, and you got a Dixie of tea. I've shaved in it many a time, drunk a bit and then shaved in it, but you could go 2 or 3 days. There wasn't time for anybody to pull it to bits, because you weren't the soldier like smartness that went out the hat. I always remember we went to attack a high point hill, 208 I think it was, and again I had a school teacher that, an officer in charge that was a school teacher, and we were in reserve for this attack. In the morning, he wanted weapon cleaning, make sure everybody had ammunition. And then he sent for me halfway through the morning, just after the weapon inspection, as a matter of fact, and asked me to tell the men to clean the boots, blacken the boots, clean the brassos on their equipment. And I said, clean the brass? You must be joking. Sun shining on brass. I want this done. And I came out of the dugout where he was at, and I met the sergeant major. And I said, and there's a fellow in there who wants the brasses clean on our equipment. Forget it. Don't clean brasses. And we spent our time cleaning weapons, making sure you had ammunition, doing patrols. And that's how you were. It was at that particular time, it was a cushy time where you could rest.
Was there any civilians in the area?
Very, very few. They all claimed to be the Mackay, what you did see. You never knew where they were or not. And after a while, we came back for a rest, for 4 days' rest. And the school teacher was a French teacher in the school he belonged. And I went away to Company HQ. And when I came back, he had the whole of my platoon sitting under a tree, learning them to speak French. And I shouted enemy action, and everybody scattered and left him. He said to me, what was that for? And I said, why, You never sit the whole bloody platoon under a bloody tree. What happens if Jerry dropped a bomb or shelled the place? He gets the lot of you in one go. And he didn't like it. And I says, as for teaching them French, how long are we going to be in France? You'll be teaching them Belgium and Dutch and German next. And me and Sergeant Higgins and Michael, Sergeant Michael, we went scrounging about like we usually do, looking for... And we came to a chateau. And we went looking for wine. And there was crates and crates of wine, bottled wine, and cask. And so we had a drink out the casks. But we never touched the bottles, because we'd always been told, never touch a bottle, because it could be poisoned, could be anything. And when I came back, this officer said to me, asked me where I'd been, and I told him that we'd been down, seen this chateau, about half a mile down the road. So it's stand to at night, he was missing. We're looking high, I was looking high and low for him. And he came up this cart track, holding his throat. I asked him what was the matter, and he couldn't speak. So we took him straight to the MI room, Italian MI room, and left him there. And he rejoined us about 3 days later. And he could hardly talk. What had happened, he'd grabbed a bottle, took a swig, and it was bleach. Burnt the skin off his throat. And he was another one that didn't stay very long.
What was wrong with these officers? Were they just inexperienced? Inexperienced. Or were they bad as well? I mean, would they never have made...
Inexperienced. You know, they were coming straight from Octu, and they wouldn't be told. You know, when the CO used to introduce these officers to us, he used to say to them, now these men are experienced, and if you don't know what to do, ask them. But, like talking to a brick wall.
This was, now he was your platoon commander, was he? What about Beatty, the company commander?
He was greatly experienced, and he was a hell of a good company commander.
What made a good company commander, in your view?
Well, again, trust. Beatty was the kind of man that, if there was a decision to be made, he could take it like that, and it would be the right one. And as I've said before, Major Beatty and Major English, they were the two men that anybody in the battalion would have followed. Even if they knew they weren't going to come back, they would have followed them, because they had the trust in them. And this is what I said early on, if you remember. I never trusted an officer till he proved himself. And it was the same with these people. And then we went back into the line, and Mount Pinion, I think it was, we went into action again. We came to two villages. One was Orney, I think it was. And Tilly. And they'd had a 1,000 bomber raid on them before we went in. And boy, they were flattened. Nothing left. They had the bulldozers, they brought the bulldozers up to clear roads through so you could get through. And eventually, that battle, Villers-Bocage, Tilly-Sissoules, was overcome.
Were the Germans resisting as well as they had done?
Oh, yes. At that particular time, it was just after that, that you started coming to German units that had these forced labour people in, you know, Poles and what have you, who couldn't care less. And they would give themselves up the first opportunity.
But during this, the sort of Picard's country, they were fighting as well as you'd ever known them.
Well, I was talking to one day, and apparently they had regular German NCOs and officers, and they used to stand over them and make them fight. This company commander, this platoon commander that I had after the Picard stew, could speak German very well. And at night time, he had two loudspeakers put out in no man's land. And the people that were facing us at that particular time were one of these labour battalions. And he used to go out at night time, speaking through a microphone in German to them, telling them to give themselves up. And quite a few did. But not all of them. Quite a few did.
What was morale like in the British side?
Oh, very high. Because we were going forward all the time. And then round about at that time, they were closing what became known as the Fally Gap. And we were attached to, I think it was the 102nd Division of the American Army. And our job was to attack forward and drive them up, and the Americans and the Canadians round the back.
Closing off the escape routes.
And when we got to the village of Falaise, well, it was bloody carnage. Carnage. And then we came to...
What do you mean by carnage? The bodies there?
Oh, bodies, tanks, lorries, cars, everything. Blown to bits.
By bombers or what?
No, by bombers. Some were bombed with the typhoons and that. But others were, you know, shot. Horses, hundreds of horses, because they were using horse and carts then for getting away with. And then we went to be mechanised infantry, which was a role apparently the 8th Battalion had practised before they went to France, before BEF. And it was a great life. You went about 30 kilometres a day in the back of a lorry.
This during the breakout?
Mm-hmm. And if there was a pocket of resistance anywhere, well, you're off and into the attack and back on again. And
what was the reception you got from the local, the French?
Oh, very good. The only thing was they'd been starved in the cities, when you went through Loos, Lille, and Amiens, and them, they were sitting begging for bully beef, chocolate. But in the rural areas, they weren't too bad.
Did they give you any sort of proper reception? Did they show they were pleased to see you?
Oh, yes, they used to all turn out and wave and all your bottle and. But you never stopped, you know. You just went straight through. You were out trying to keep up with the guards. Armoured was in front of us, and 7th Armoured Div was on our right, and you were keeping up with the armoured. If they had any problems, well, you were the boys to go in and sort it out.
Were there pockets of resistance? Were they serious, or would they fade away?
Well, we met very few, but we were in reserve on this particular do, so the forward troops would get that. And we just mopped up.
The companies, you were reserve company, were you?
Reserve battalion of the three battalions. And we were in Brussels in about 3 weeks, I think it was.
I believe there was quite a reception in Brussels. Oh, what do you remember about that?
Well, we went straight through. The Guards Armoured and the 55th Highland Division went into Brussels, and they got the reception and that. And as I say, 50 Div was in reserve that particular time, and we just went straight through. And we stayed at a village about 12 miles from Brussels, I think it was. And we arrived there about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And on the night time we got word that we were staying there for 4 days. And a quarter of each company would get 24 hours leave into Brussels. And I rang my two mates up. One was the orderly room sergeant and one was the MI sergeant, and asked them what day they were going. They said they were going on the last day. So I said, right, I'll go on the last day. And so for 3 days I was going out with a section of men on a three tonner going out on patrol. Well, we travelled maybe 30, 40 mile an area looking for stray bush, going into villages, asking if there was any, if they knew where there was any. And I came back on the third day, and on the night time, orders were, no more leave tomorrow, we're moving off. So that was my day in Brussels gone. And we moved off, and we pulled into this area. There was nowhere there. It was just my platoon was in a little copse, and we unloaded, and I was issuing the blankets to make and ground sheets to make bivacs when I got the order I had to go to Company HQ. When I got to Company HQ, the second in command of the battalion was there. No company commander. And the second in command of the company and the other two platoon commanders were there. That was like three officers and me. And the second in command of the battalion, he was out the guards. I forget his name now. He said to us that the Greenhowards and the East Yorks had crossed the Albert Canal, and they were pinned down, couldn't move. And so the 8th Battalion was going to do a crossing on the right of them to relieve them. That Major BT had gone on the recce, and we would meet him at the point of takeoff. And he briefed us about it, and he said, any questions? And I said, yes. The last three actions we've gone into, I have been the leading platoon. You're asking me to do another one as a leading platoon. So he said, Major Beatty told me you would ask that question. And I'm going to tell you what Major Beatty said. He could trust you to do the job. So I went back to the platoon and said, right, we're doing a river crossing, a canal crossing. Oh, what again? And then we got the order to move out, and load up and move out. And we went to tell a funny name. But when we got there, Major Beatty was there. And it was right next to the canal. But the sides of the canal came up about 10 feet. And we were at this side of the canal. And the second in command must have been and told him what I'd said. And he said to me, "Don't worry. It's an easy job." They're all easy. And we went in at 4 o'clock, and we received these canvas boats, two to a platoon, one to Company HQ, and Company HQ was going in with my platoon, and the other two platoons was further down the canal, nearer the bridge that had been blown. And at 4 o'clock, he climbed up this bank, slid the boats down into the water, and I was holding the rope on one boat. Major Beatty was about 2 yards off us, holding the Company HQ boat, and there was a corporal holding the other boat while the boys came over the top and got in. And he let us nearly all get in before they opened up with a spandau. And there was a young lad in the HQ boat, he used to sing in the cathedral choir. And he was shot through the head. And then Major Beatty said to me, "I've been hit." Well, his boat was full, so I said, "Right, drop the rope and get away back." And in front of us was a dredger that used to clean. Luckily for my platoon, we were sheltered by this dredger. They couldn't see us for the dredger. And so we went across. And the first objective was about 100 yards away, and it was a ditch. And we had to get to this objective, and then reform before we went into the final objective. And when we reached this objective, no officer. So I shouted of 8 platoon and 9 platoon commanders. The two sergeants came up and I said, "Where's the officers?" "Two's dead." "What happened to the other one?" "We don't know, I've never seen him." So I said, "What happened, like?" And Jerry had shot the boats where they were, sunk them, and they'd had to swim for it. And so I said, "Well, here's a way, Sergeant Major, it's your pigeon." And it was his first time in action. And he said, "No, it's your job." So we went for our target, and we got it. We lost quite a few men, but we managed to get it. And then Jerry counterattacked, and we beat the counterattack off. And there was two spandaus firing at us on fixed lines. So I took a brain gun and a brain gun, and we shot one up, but we couldn't find the other one. Where he was, we didn't know. But he was firing down this road, and our target was a T junction, and this road was the autobahn, and our target was around this T road, and this fixed line was firing down this autobahn. So anyhow, we beat this attack off, and we all got settled in, dug in, and I sent word back to the canal that we were on target. We'd suffered heavy casualties, and we were getting low on ammunition. And where the runner got to, I never saw him till the next morning. But before we'd set off, the REs had come up with a Bailey bridge, and they were going to have it over the canal by 7 o'clock. Unfortunately, they didn't get it over till the early hours of the morning. Anyhow, the other three companies came up to this T-junction where I was, and say this spandau was firing this fixed line down this road, and the first few that tried to get over it were wounded. So I shouted to the company, it was the B company, I think, to form up in tens. And when I shouted, run like hell, 10 at a time. And as soon as he stopped firing, I shouted, right, 10 men run over. Then he'd fire again, and then another 10. And that's how I got the three rifle companies through. Well, they spread out. You know, in front of us, they went to their objectives. But there was one of these, Akak guns. It's similar to a Bofa, but it was smaller. And it fired a shell that burst, like an air burst. And he gave us some hammer with this thing. And then the first thing over was, the first thing over the bridge in the early hours of the morning was a carrier with the artillery officer in, pinpointing where to fire and that. And by then, this farmhouse where we were was full of wounded. We were having to put them in there, you know, to keep them in shelter out of the cold. And we stayed there all night. And then at stand to, it was just breaking dawn. This major out of the artillery shouted to me, give me a brain gun. There's some Jerry's digging in here. And I gave him a brain gun. And he fired it. I fired a couple of magazines off. So that'll... And I never thought no more about it. And then I went round to visit the other two platoons that was at the other side of the farmhouse from where we were. And here's the sergeant and six of the lads shot dead. And when I looked back at the farmhouse, I could see this window where this major had been firing out of. And so I came back and I said to him, are you sure those lads out there were Jerry's that you saw digging in? He said, oh, you are. I said, well, there's six men out there shot from this window. And into the carrier and away. Never saw him anymore. But whether he had shot them or not, I don't know. You kind of dig bullets out dead people. And I counted the men up, and we were about 70 strong out of 100 and nearly 140. And by then, the wagon, the 1,500 wagons were coming up and taking all the wounded back to the MI room. Now, while I was getting the three companies over, I got hit with a ricochet in the eye here. Half an inch lower, I'd have lost my eye. But
just the left eye?
Aye. And so when things quieted down, I said to the sergeant major, well, I'm going back to the MI room, get a dressing on this, because I had one of them big shell dressings on, you know, and the blood was pouring. Get rid of this and get something on it. And I went, and when I got to this bridge, there's a young soldier lying, and he'd been wounded in the leg. So I carried him across the bridge, And there was a carrier at the other side of the bridge, and put him on the carrier and take him to the MI room. And I went to the MI room, and the MO just looked at it and said, nothing to bother about. And he put a plaster on, a little thing on it. And I had a cup of coffee, and while I was getting a cup of coffee,